Welcome back to Beyond the Heart. I'm your host, Dr. Nisa Goldberg. We're being joined by phone by Dr. Deepak Kapoor. Dr. Kapoor is a urologist and president of Advanced Urology Centers of New York. Welcome to the show, Dr. Kapoor.
Thank you, Nisa, for having me. It's my pleasure to be here.
Oh, thank you. Can you tell us a little bit about Advanced Urology Centers of New York?
Yeah, Advanced Urology Centers of New York is the largest integrated urology group practice in the United States.
Wow.
We have 55 offices throughout the greater New York metropolitan area. We service 8 counties, and we have about 1.3 million active patients. So we have a number of urologists. Actually, we have over 100 physicians throughout the region. Many of whom have subspecialty training, including in the subject that we're going to talk about today, urinary incontinence.
That's right. I mean, you must have, there are a lot of people with urologic problems in the New York area with those patients.
It's actually
across the country, I'm sure.
Across the country, but yes, you know, the nature of urological disease is that it's a very sensitive area of the body.
I know, so people don't want to really talk about incontinence.
Well, you know, it's amazing that that you mentioned that because incontinence is really considered one of the most significant medical conditions, non-life-threatening medical conditions that can affect quality of life. And men and women, none of them, they actually don't talk to their families and they don't talk to their family doctors about it.
No.
So I think it's so great that you're increasing awareness, because the reality is that there's so much that we can do to help in this. And in urology, people kind of call this the secret shame.
I really think the role of Dr. Radio is to help our listeners ask those questions that they can't ask anywhere else.
And overcoming those boundaries to understand that,
sure,
you know, you're not alone in this. There's millions and millions of other people that have this problem, and that there is actually a medical community that's there to listen and help you.
So let's talk around. We decided we would talk today about stress incontinence, but I think you should talk a little bit about what the whole area of what the condition of incontinence is.
Yeah. So incontinence, put most simply, is the involuntary loss of urine. And when we're talking about urinary incontinence,
right,
you could have incontinence of stool as well, but that's really another area of discussion. So simply put, incontinence is the involuntary loss of urine, and that could be precipitated by a number of different factors. So although to the patient, the loss of urine is really the problem in and of itself, to the treating physician, there's actually multiple different types of urinary incontinence, which is why it's very important that people be seen by a trained physician, somebody with experience in this area, so we can differentiate the different causes of incontinence and make sure that the person is treated appropriately.
So let's talk about this whole area of stress incontinence.
So if we break down incontinence, stress incontinence is the involuntary loss of urine that's caused by a sudden increase in abdominal pressure. And that abdominal pressure can be increased by a variety of things. The most common thing is laughing, coughing, sneezing. It could be exercise, bending over. And in some people whose stress incontinence is really severe, even the increased pressure of breathing can actually,
wow,
produce an involuntary loss of urine when it's very, very severe like that. And it's very important, Nisa, that we differentiate that from urgency incontinence. When you have,
okay,
because there are sometimes when people have the sensation that they're going to go. In other words, oh my God, I gotta go, and then you don't make,
sure,
it to the bathroom in time. And there's a lot of radio advertising that's out around things like overactive bladder.
Sure, for medications.
Right, frequency, urgency, waking up at night a lot to urinate, not having to run to the bathroom often, all these things. Now, those things can exist simultaneously with stress incontinence, but they're not stress incontinence.
Well, I
they're
think it's really,
different.
You know, it's really important for our listeners to understand the symptoms and when they have to seek out a doctor like you.
Right. And so, in essence, when you're talking about urgency symptoms like that, urgency symptoms are sometimes associated with other disorders, like,
sure,
for example, neurological diseases or diabetes or endocrinological problems, or sometimes even conditions within the bladder, like stones or tumors, can cause those types of what we call irritative urinary symptoms, frequency, urgency, excessive waking up at night to urinate, things of that nature. And those things should be evaluated to make sure that the urinary tract infections, those type of things need to be excluded before we talk about any other type of discussion. Now, if you have what we call pure stress urinary incontinence,
yes,
which is you don't have any of the other symptoms, you don't have those that frequency and urgency or those other types of problems.
So that your symptoms occur with increased abdominal pressure, like sneezing, laughing, exercise.
Correct.
Okay.
Pure stress incontinence, that's more of an anatomical problem. So if you'll indulge me, I'll explain it to the listeners because
our listeners are starting to line up with questions. So I'm going to give out the numbers because we want them to be able to ask questions that they may have not been able to ask their other doctors about the issue of stress incontinence because they're shy. They can call in at 877-NYU-DOCS. That's 877-698-3627. And of course, if you're very shy, you have the email option docs@SiriusXM.com. So go ahead, Deepak.
So the way that we think about this is that imagine if your bladder and the urethra, which is the opening of the bladder, is like a water balloon with an opening. Okay? So if you were to take the water balloon and you were to squeeze it, the water would squirt out the front end of it. Now, if you took the water balloon and you squeezed the opening and the balloon at the exact same time with the exact same pressure, those two things would cancel each other out and no water would come out. Now, that's the way the body is designed to function. The urethra is actually, when it's functioning in its correct position, is actually within the abdominal cavity. So any increase in pressure that's transmitted to the bladder is transmitted equally to the urethra, so the effect cancels out. When the muscles that support the urethra weaken, then what happens is that the bladder neck and the urethra actually fall into the vagina. Okay. And that's what we call bladder neck descensus, or descent of the bladder neck.
Okay.
So when the bladder neck falls into the vagina, what happens is that the pressures that are transmitted to the bladder are no longer transmitted to the urethra. In other words, the closure pressure doesn't exist. So you're squeezing the water balloon and not squeezing the opening. So the treatments for stress incontinence are designed to provide, to try to either work around the weaknesses of the muscle that allow the urethra to descend, or to return the urethra to its normal anatomical position, in a nutshell.
Wow, that's really interesting. And we have Francis on the line from Georgia. Hi, Francis. How can we help you?
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
Well, I just wanted to tell you all that I had a urethral sting last year, and I'm 41 years old. And I had three children, and after my third baby, I was increasingly having stress incontinence, exactly what you guys were talking about, and it was the best thing I ever did. I was very active, and it had gotten to the point where I was just wetting myself standing up. It was, so I had the urethral sling, and now, I mean, I can run, I can jump rope, I can do everything, and it is just, it was so liberating, and I just want to tell people out there to please talk to your doctors. It's just, I'm young, and I knew that if I could fix this, my life would be so much more complete.
So, Deepak,
Francis,
do you want to talk about this sling and what's
absolutely
going on here for our other listeners?
First of all, Francis, I want to thank you for sharing your story. You mentioned that you had three children, and some of my female patients come in, and they say that stress incontinence is the gift that their children give them that keep on giving. You know, But I'm really glad that you mentioned that, because there's a lot of anxiety about having surgical procedures done. And certainly the urethral sling procedure that you described, that's the most common surgical treatment that we do. And the efficacy of the sling is really, really high. So if you select the appropriate patient, so when you come in to be evaluated for stress incontinence, it's important that we rule out any other type of incontinence first. So you're going to have a complete history, a physical examination, maybe a minor neurological test, and the physician, depending on your symptoms, may or may not order some additional testing, what we call urodynamic testing, to rule out any other problems.
So
once you've identified that there's pure stress incontinence, a sling is an outstanding option, and the success rate for the sling is well in excess of 90%.
So Francis, how long did you live with this problem before you did something?
Well, I always, even before children, it was like I knew that I didn't have a great blood. You know what I mean? I wasn't one to get on a trampoline very easily, so I think I had a little bit of it prior to having children.
Uh-huh.
But the children exacerbated it. It was, and my youngest child is 11, so, and it was really bad after my second child. So I went ahead and had another child. It was a good 10 years, and I had my last child when I was 30. So, but it progressively got worse. It was like it would trickle when I would sneeze, to cough, and laugh.
Uh-huh.
And then it got to the point where I would literally stand up too fast, and I would trickle on myself. So it had gotten to the point where it was getting pretty bad. I went from wearing little panty liners to wearing full on, poise, really, and to exercise, it was almost like I could do 30 minutes of exercise before I'd fill up a whole big period pack.
Wow. Francis, how long did it take you before you talked to your doctor about this? Was it uncomfortable talking to your doctor?
I'm a pretty open person.
Okay.
So it wasn't too bad for me to talk to them about it. I wanted to fix it. What I have done is I've really talked to my friends about it, and I've opened up a dialogue with them around this, because this is serious. It really has shut a lot of women down, and we need to get out there. We need to talk to each other about these issues, just like you guys are doing today, because it's life-stopping for a lot of women. No one wants to walk around wearing diapers. I'm a 41-year-old woman. This is ridiculous. And if there's a simple solution, it took me 6 weeks to recover, less than that, really. I was better in a couple weeks. But 6 weeks was my, doctor. It was great. It's the best thing I've ever done. I'm telling you.
It's great.
No,
it's great to have you call in, Francis. Thanks so much. Deepak, how are we going to get people to come out and talk about this?
Well, I think that the most important thing is to realize that there's nothing to be embarrassed about. Like Francis says, it's an extremely common problem. There's tens of millions of people in the United States that suffer from incontinence. But it's also important to understand, though, that not everybody is going to need surgery. Francis type of circumstance, and there are actually many conservative things that we can do. There's lifestyle modifications sometimes that we can do, and even there's pelvic floor exercises that can be done that women can be encouraged to do when from a younger age and continue to carry on through throughout the childbearing age and later on, because we can actually strengthen the pelvic floor. There's conservative treatments that exist. We have things like behavioral modification therapy, biofeedback treatment.
How does behavioral modification help?
So sometimes what happens is that there isn't really a problem with the bladder, but sometimes people are so busy that they don't urinate often enough.
I see.
So we can call it like a nursemaid bladder, or that's the conventional term. So what happens is that the bladder physiology is designed to retain urine within a certain range, but if you allow yourself to become overly full,
so it overflows.
And then the pressures may make you leak. So sometimes we can institute things like a timed voiding regimen. Sometimes there's dietary modifications that we can use. So I don't want women to think that, if I have stress incontinence, I must need surgery. Nothing could be further from the truth. And people with mild stress urinary incontinence, with pelvic floor exercises, with the proper doing of Kegel exercises, and a combination of Kegel exercises and behavioral modification, may not need surgery at all. So the important thing is not to be afraid to ask your doctor. Don't be afraid that, I'm going to talk to my doctor, and then a week later I'm going to be in the operating room. It's not at all like that. We have many options, and our physicians, the physicians at Advanced Urology Centers, we're extremely skilled in this. In fact, we have a number of physicians that only do female urology in our area. So it's very important to find somebody with expertise in this area, and once you do, you can be walked through the conservative therapies, and if they fail, or if your condition is so severe, then of course surgery is another option that exists as well.
Yeah, I want to let our listeners know we're on the phone with Dr. Deepak Kapoor. He's urologist and president of Advanced Urology Centers of New York. Give us a call at 877-NYU-DOCS. That's 877-698-3627. We're talking about stress incontinence, and you can also email us at docs@SiriusXM.com. Our phone lines are full, Deepak. We're going to welcome Lisa from Illinois. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. How can we help you today?
Okay. Well, I had a 11-pound baby natural, unfortunately, and it sort of wreaked havoc on the lower extremities of my body. So once I reached menopause, my uterus dropped, and they mentioned to me I needed the mesh. And they also said, once we get the mesh in, chances are you're going to have some incontinence, so we're going to put the sling on your bladder as well. So I went through all the surgeries for that. And after the surgery, I couldn't urinate on my own at all. The sling apparently was too tight. Now, I know you were mentioning a sling for the urethral area opposed to the bladder, or is that the same thing?
No, well, again, what you're talking about, Lisa, and thank you for reaching out, and Sherry, I can't, as a man, I can't even imagine putting 11 pounds through through my pelvis, so it certainly is quite a heroic endeavor.
Wow.
But what your situation is a lot different than what we've been talking about, which is someone with simple stress urinary incontinence. When you require the type of pelvic reconstruction that that you require, it's a much, much more complicated surgical procedure. So you're talking about if everything had fallen, I assume, and I don't want to pry, but I assume that they removed your uterus and your ovaries and then reconstructed the pelvic floor and added a sling for any secondary incontinence that could occur, correct?
My uterus is still in.
Okay, so they just pulled everything back up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but I noticed that the urethra is down again, almost like it's crowning, if you will. And then I realized that the discomfort I was feeling when I was pushing the vacuum or lifting a box, that the mesh is already detached itself. And the frustration I have with both of the mesh and the sling failing is just so disappointing, because now I have to walk around with this urethra hanging down. It's a little uncomfortable, but it's not uncomfortable all the time. But when I was listening and I heard you mention the sling for just the urethra, I thought maybe that would work better than the bladder sling, where I couldn't urinate for 2 months because they couldn't give me, I couldn't go through the surgery again until my body healed for about 6 weeks, and then they just snipped it off.
Yeah, the certainly. When you have the type of reconstruction that you had, where you have a full pelvic reconstruction, that's a much, much more complicated procedure, and the complication rates are much higher for what you're talking about than a simple urethral elevation. So if you are putting a sling in simply for the purposes of stress urinary incontinence, certainly one of the complications is that people may have difficulty urinating for a couple of days.
I see.
But that's usually very, very self-limited. The overwhelming majority of women don't need a catheter, and the success rate is very high. The greater the magnitude of the surgery, then certainly the side effects can be greater, and that's why it's really important that before you have any operation, that you make sure that you have a really complete conversation with your physician, so you understand the pros and cons and the potential side effects of what you're going to be having.
And, you know, also learn some other options that might be there.
Yeah, I just didn't get too many. I wasn't warned about the mesh detaching because perhaps I'm still active enough at 54, where it could easily detach itself. Maybe if I was 65 or something like that, that probably would have worked. But, you know, nothing's really worked for me in that situation. But I just wanted to let you know that those were some things that could possibly happen to some of the callers calling in.
Okay, so thanks for calling in. We're going to welcome Mary from Florida. Hi, Mary. How can we help you?
Hello there. I am 62. I am active, whereby I am drinking a lot of water during the day, and I have I believe it to be urgent bladder, not so much stress incontinence. And I am just wanting to pick your brain in terms of meds.
Medicine. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. No, I was just wondering about any type of like a mirabetrix type, anything that you're familiar with and have had good success.
Well, there's a whole variety of different medications.
Right, so let's talk a little bit about that.
Right, so if you're having the constellation of symptoms that we fall into the broad category of overactive bladder, frequency, urgency, waking up at night to urinate, these sorts of symptoms. And once you exclude other problems, as we talked about, so any type of intrinsic disease in the bladder or a stone or an infection, anything like that, certainly in some respects, as we age, the bladder doesn't function as quite as well as it once did, and you can develop these symptoms simply because the bladder doesn't function as it did when we were younger. Now, in those circumstances, when we've ruled out any other problems, medications can be very useful. And the medications we use, they vary in what they do, but for the most part, we focus on either tightening the urinary sphincter with certain meds, and we don't do that very often, or the other thing is medications that relax the bladder muscle that allow increased capacity. And the medicine that you mentioned, mirabetrix, is one of the newest ones that that exists that people have had a lot of results with. By no means is it the only medication in the class. There's a whole variety of other ones that exist. Some of them are available and are generic. Some of them are brand names. And what we'll sometimes do is we'll actually try different medications because some of them have slightly more side effects in some area and less side effects in the others. The general side effects that people experience from all these medications that are in the class, and there's about 8 of them that that we can use, are variable degrees of dry mouth or constipation. And and the reason for the constipation is that the nerve endings that that control the rectal function and the nerve endings that control the bladder function are actually very similar. So there can be a little bit of crossover there that results in a little constipation. Drinking a lot of water like you do certainly is a great help. But the important thing is two things, or three things nowadays. Number one, does the medication work for you? Number two, are you tolerating the medication? And number three, is the medication affordable for you? And between all the various pharmacological agents that we have, almost invariably we can find one that meets the requirements for all three.
Interesting. Okay.
Thanks for calling in, Mary. We have just a little time left, but Emma's been waiting. So, Emma, can you quickly ask your question? Because we only have about a minute left. Go ahead.
Very quickly, I'm wondering what the lifetime of the sling, the urethral sling, is. I've had one for 13 years, working beautifully. I'm 69 and very, very active, and I'm just wondering, you know, will that be replaced?
Good question. Yeah. Deepak?
Typically, the slings are good for the life of the patient. What we see, actually, is that if you don't... the times that we have problems actually is that the sling, because it's the sling heals in, is that if people don't maintain a healthy lifestyle and they have other deterioration, is that the tissues sometimes deteriorate around the sling. the sling stays there, and you can get secondary problems that are around it. But I would certainly encourage you to continue to do pelvic floor exercises, maintain a good regimen of diet and exercise, keep your weight under control, and if you do all those things, the probability is that you and your sling will have a good long life together.
Well, thank you for your question, Emma. And Dr. Deepak Kapoor is urologist and president of Advanced Urology Centers of New York. I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me and shedding giving me the opportunity.
This is a great conversation that we're going to have to continue at another time. We're going to take a break right now.